There must be some way out of here, said the Joker to the thief. There's too much confusion, I can't get no relief. Businessmen, they drink my wine, plowmen dig my earth. None of them along the line know what any of it is worth.
All right, we're back on the Investigative Journal, and my guest, next guest, Kevin Abrams, who wrote a book called Pink Swastika, will be with us shortly after this three-minute segment, and we'll have a really good hour getting into this book is very interesting to me, and it's something that needs to be clarified, and that is the homosexuality issue regarding many, many people in the Nazi Party and also in the administrations in our country. So we're going to get into that. And also, I want to talk to him about Slave Ship America, his website, .com. So we're going to get into that also. But first, I wanted to update you. We talk a lot about political prisoners in our country. And yesterday, we had Mike Cook, who just went in a psych ward because he said 9/11 was an inside job to someone at his school in Kentucky. And it just the story just snowballed from there, and the poor guy is now the second time back in a federal psych ward. He shouldn't be there. So we're going to follow his story. But Susan Lindauer, let me just recap that. She's been on my show, and Susan is the cousin of Andy Card, the White House former White House chief of staff. She tried to buck the system. She knew what was going on regarding Iraq and had all this information that there were no weapons of mass destruction. Well, she tried to tell the truth. She spent 1 year in a psych ward, and that's their family members. She was on my show twice and tried to contact her since, and I get the impression that they came down on her hard because she's not talking like she was before. So we're going to try to find out what's going on with Susan. I'm going to update you on Elizabeth Baumgardner. Graduated first from her class in Toledo as a lawyer, tried to buck the system in Ohio. She was a prominent lawyer in Ohio, and her story I documented so many times on my show. She's now awaiting an 8-year prison sentence for basically speaking up at a city council meeting, uncovering massive corruption in Ohio, and she's going to appeal that 8-year sentence. Kathy Fisher. Let me update that. She's out of jail. She spent, 60 days in jail, and that was for putting up posters in a downtown Cleveland neighborhood. And she's an activist that saw the brunt of the Bush administration and ended, had to end up spend 60 days in jail for felonies that she never even committed. And all she wanted to do was to put up a poster opposing Bush's war. So those are just a few of the political prisoners and their updates. We'll keep in touch with those stories. I wanted to update you in the last minute here about New Orleans. And Clotilde Mack, the woman that the Investigative Journal listeners a year ago helped get back to New Orleans. We showed you through the story of this 85-year-old woman exactly what happened in New Orleans and exactly how FEMA and the rest of the people tried to keep the people out of New Orleans. Well, we got Clotilde Mack back. And she's going to be moving into her home, I think, in a week. I'm going to call her up. And my motorhome is down there because Clotilde ended up, we had to use my motorhome to get her to New Orleans because FEMA would have left her to die in Kentucky or Tennessee where she was at. And I mean that. So we got her back and got her a trailer, got her $26,000, got people to repair her home. And she's now going looking for appliances, and she's living in the FEMA trailer that they never would have given her because they told her basically this, you either stay in Tennessee or you're not going to get anything. Well, we stepped in and got her home. Well, my motorhome is still there, and I've never had time to go get it. And if anybody's in New Orleans knows a place I can keep it because she doesn't have any room to do that, please contact me, or if you can drive it to Colorado, let me know. We'll be back with my guest, Kevin Abrams and the Pink Swastika after this short message.
Do you suffer from frequent and severe headaches? Well, you don't have to any longer. Headache Stay Gone is an all-natural headache remedy that is free of all side effects. Headache Stay Gone will cure any headache, and prevent it from returning again. Painkillers can offer temporary relief at best, along with a long list of harmful side effects. Headache Stagon uses all natural ingredients and cures your headache, letting you enjoy more time with your family and loved ones. We'll send you a bottle of Headache Stagon today and send you the bill. Wait until your headache is cured before you pay for it. That's right, Headache Stagon must work for you before you pay for it. Try Headache Stagon risk-free by calling 1-800-327-0727 or visit www.headachestagon.com. Again, that's 1-800-327-0727. And don't forget to ask about your risk-free trial today. Call now. Start living life without the headaches.
Attention, attention everyone. A brand new invention just released. It's called WristEase, the new patented portable ergonomic wrist support. WristEase comforts your wrists from the sometimes painful tasks of typing, writing, using a mouse or adding machine. Unlike most conventional wrist pads that are either attached to a mouse pad or lay flat in front of your keyboard, WristEase is totally portable and ideal for laptop users and technicians who are constantly on the go. WristEase is perfect for children doing homework or playing video games. WristEase provides the proper comfort and support for all ages and provides comfort for victims of carpal tunnel syndrome and other repetitive injuries. You can order WristEase now at WristEase.com. That's WristEase, WristEase, WristEase.com. Once again, that's WristEase, WristEase.com.
Attention, this is an RBN Financial News Bulletin. Have you ever wanted to get out of debt, maybe even make some of your debts disappear completely? If so, and you're an RBN listener, there is a very real chance you will be able to do it. Here is why. A new manual has just been published that reveals how you can get out of debt in 90 minutes without any loans or bankruptcy whatsoever. The insider secrets revealed allow you to get out of debt so fast and so completely that it makes some people feel like they're stealing, but they're not stealing. The secrets taught in the manual are 100% legal and 100% ethical. It's just that bankers, debt collectors, and credit card companies don't want you to know about these loopholes. Don't be a prisoner of debt. Go to outin90.com. That's www.outin90.com or call 877-327-0365. RBN listeners receive a free DVD with purchase.
All right, we're back on the Investigative Journal, and my name is Greg Szymanski, your host, and I'm here every day on RBN from 11 to 1 Central Time, and I wanted to get right to my guest, Kevin Abrams. He's been with us before, and many people emailed me in the interim from the last time Kevin was on saying, please get him Kevin back to talk about Pink Swastika again. And the reason that it's important is that it really clarifies many things that are going on in our country. And it talks about the rampant homosexuality in the Nazi Party and also it ties into what may be going on in the administration now and many people that are running this country. So I wanted to tie those knots together. And I also wanted to mention this, Kevin, that I've had people on my show that have documented and there's three or four people that can verify that the Pope, that's Pope Benedict, is a homosexual and has a 24-year-old lover. And I've gotten that from information inside the Vatican from three different sources. And I just wanted to bring that up. But anyway, how are you today?
Great. Nice to be with you, Greg.
You know what I think we should do is talk about Pink Swastika, your book, and then move on from there. And I wanted to get into Slave Ship America. But go ahead. Just tell us about Pink Swastika.
Well, in 1995, my co-author Scott Lively and I authored the first edition of the Pink Swastika. It's now gone to the fourth edition, and it's twice the number of pages and with an incredible amount of additional documentation from, you know, leading up from the first edition. So we've printed over 25,000 copies of the Pink Swastika, and also the Pink Swastika has been available through the web for downloading free of charge, so people can go and read it for themselves. They can access the Pink Swastika through my website, slaveshipamerica.com. At the bottom of the page, there's a link directly to the site. Now, the Pink Swastika was written in response to gay activist claims that Jews were victims alongside, or homosexuals were victims alongside the Jewish people during the Holocaust. And, of course, after doing investigating that claim, what we discovered was that one of the major perpetrators of brutality and persecution, one of the major groups that were involved in that perpetration of brutality and persecution in Germany, were the militant gay factions of the Nazi movement or the National Socialist movement. The brown shirt organization led by, that was the Stormtroopers, led by Captain Ernst Röhm, were instrumental in bringing Hitler to power. Ernst Röhm was one of Hitler's closest confidants of 14 years. And if it hadn't have been for the brown shirt organization working from below, agitating in the street, the party working from above more than likely never would have succeeded in seizing power in Germany in 1933. We've also documented, actually, Carol Quigley, in his book Tragedy and Hope, he was one of Clinton's mentors in the White House, or at Georgetown University, documents in his book that that it was a homosexual arson squad that torched the Reichstag in 1933, for which they framed a Dutch communist and executed him. That enabled them to force the suspension of the electoral process, repression of political opponents, and also to consolidate their power. And basically, from that point on, the Democratic Republic, for all intents and purposes, ceased to exist. So the Pink Swastika has taken on a life of its own. If you go on and you punch in on Google the Pink Swastika, you'll get several thousands of links to various views, opinions. It's being spoken of in a variety of different languages. So it's gained a tremendous amount of credibility in spite of the major attempt to block awareness to or of the Pink Swastika by major news media. It's been fairly successful in gaining credibility. There's been an attempt to refute the claims being made in the Pink Swastika, but besides a few minor corrections, it stands substantially validated and is very well documented. The end notes are extensive. We've referred to past historians, credible historians like William Shire, Conrad Haydn in his book Die Führer. And in one particular instance, we refer to, or in many instances, we refer to Germany's National Vice, which was written by a historian by the name of Samuel Igra in 1945. So we're not the first ones to identify this this aspect of the Nazi movement or of the this aspect of German militarism per se throughout the centuries, that the homoerotic component of militarism is a prevailing component throughout history. It was an aspect of the Thebans, the Spartans. Of course, we know that the Spartans were comprised of a homoerotic warrior or animated by a homoerotic warrior ethos, and that the Sambia of Papua New Guinea, which are documented by an anthropologist, historical anthropologist by the name of Gilbert Hurt. He wrote a book on the Sambia, documents the homoerotic initiation rituals into the warrior cult within the tribe. And basically, the Nazi movement embraced this concept all the way from academia up in, as an animating or a sustaining force to the Nazi movement through academia, and it was seen as a way of preserving the nation state, so to speak, and the relationships between men and women were considered to be inferior, as they were in Greece, ancient Greece, that the eros was best between comrades, young boys or the initiates. Actually, the Rossbach organization, which came out of World War I, one of the Freikorps movements, the Freebooter movements that came, one of the disbanded army units that came out of World War I, led by one Gerhard Rossbach. That's where the brown shirt. They used to wear brown shirts in his unit. There were some 160 of these units that roamed throughout Germany after World War I. They were more or less laws unto themselves. But the Rossbach organization also had a youth contingent under it that was basically the also homosexual. It was an entirely homosexual organization, and. So the seeds of Nazi militarism are to be found. The animating, the quickening force between or behind Nazi militarism and the barbarism that we saw during World War II on the part of the SS, the brown shirts, the Nazi death camps, and so forth, were you can be attributed to the corruption of human sexuality as it is represented in the. In a group of men who organize themselves around a sexual principle, if you will. And relating to the Pope Benedict and the Catholic Church or Rome, this is on its face an all-male organization or dominated organization. So the likelihood of some of homoerotic activity is in amongst the rank and file within the Catholic Church has been well, it's not a likelihood, it's been well documented, and the abuses have been well documented, especially in today's open media on the Internet and so forth. This information is becoming increasingly available. So when you organize when you have an organization which is exclusively male, then the female aspect of the group is made subservient to the male-dominated group, which is basically the concept of a military or a militaristic type of society.
You know what I liked about your book was that you, when most people, when you say, okay, the Nazis were homosexual, Pope Benedict is a homosexual, there are homosexuality rampant, running rampant in our country with people in power, you automatically think, well, they're effeminate and they must be very, very understanding and thoughtful. You have that idea of homosexuality that has been given to us through the media and TV shows and everything. You always get that that affectionate feeling that a man has more feelings if he's homosexual, he's more caring. But you found out it's not really that way. We only have a minute, but start out and then we'll come back after the break and get into that because you begin to clarify the differences, different types of homosexuals. Go ahead.
There was a culture war, which is an important culture war to identify in pre-Nazi Germany, which took place between the two factions within the homosexualist world, if you will. One faction, for purposes of political and cultural identification, should be known as the militant gay faction, dominated by, Ernst Röhm is the more familiar figure, but Hans Bloor was the leader of a group who had their own newspaper, for instance, titled the Eigen A, or Community of the Special. And so they viewed sexual relations between comrades and intergenerational relationships between men and boys as an aspect of a superior ruling class sexuality. And so homosexuality was not homoerotic relations were not looked down upon. It's just that the target of sexual affectations amongst the Nazi leadership were young boys and comrades, as opposed to the Magnus Hirschfeld crowd. Magnus Hirschfeld was an effeminate Jewish physician who founded the Institute of Sexology and the Scientific Humanitarian Committee for the emancipation of homosexuals as a third sex, as a scientifically defined or clinically defined third sex.
Kevin, could you hold that thought right there? We're going to take a short break and pick up right where you left off after this short break on the Investigative Journal.
desire your health and vitality to be in harmony with the rhythms of nature? Trivortex technology features subtle energy products that boost energy levels, release pain and stress, and much more at very affordable prices. You have the opportunity to wear vitamins, minerals, and nutrients that absorb through your skin rather than taking them orally. This is real, not science fiction. Go to trivortex.com, that is TRIVORTEX.com, to open a whole new realm of health and vitality for you and your family. This is Brian David Anderson, inventor of Trivortex technology products that assist in so many areas, such as pain relief, symptoms of menopause, losing weight, or stopping smoking. Trivortex technology is in harmony with the rhythms of nature.
Hey, America, how does it feel to be flushed down the toilet of political intrigue and treachery into the sewer of slavery and bondage, where perverts and the godless write the rules? Our unborn children are murdered, our esteemed elders are euthanized, and everyone in between is numbered and tracked like criminals so they can be farmed by government, credit, healthcare organizations, like the chicken farmer farms his chickens. Have you had enough? Is it time to declare your liberty? It's your choice, you know. The only place to begin to declare your independence is to have enough food stored so that you never have to go stand in a bread line to give away the rest of your life or sell your children for a bowl of rice and a slice of bread. Call 800-409-5633. On the web, efoodsdirect.com. 800-409-5633.
Do you know the truth about cancer treatments? Do you realize that with all presently accepted methods, you are not correctly attacking the cancer and you are mostly fighting to survive the treatment? Do you realize that mutilating surgery, burning and poisoning of your entire system are totally unnecessary? But now it's cancer's turn to die with LaserMed Inc. patented methodology. Without cutting, bleeding, drugs, or damaging radiation, we can destroy skin cancer and breast tumors of any size without adverse side effects at our physician's office. Laser technology at its best. For more information, here's the number to call, 702-953-0267. Or visit www.lasemedinc.com on the web. That's www.lasemedinc.com. That number to call again, 702-953-0267.
John is in a basement mixing up the medicine. Thinking about the government, the man in a trench coat, bad job laid off. Says he's got a bad cough, wants to get it paid off. Took out a kid, it's something you did. God knows when, but you're doing it again. You better duck down the alleyway, looking for a new friend. The man in a coonskin cap in a pig pen wants $11 bills. You only got 10.
Okay, we're back with my guest, Kevin Abrams. He's written a book called Pink Swastika. And Kevin, go ahead, pick up where you left off. Regarding the differences of homosexuality.
Okay, like I mentioned, Magnus Hirschfeld embraced the concept or taught the concept of the third sex for the effeminate side of the homosexual world, and was known as an expert in the field. German courts sentenced or referred people under Section 175 of the German Penal Code to Hirschfeld's Institute in Berlin for observation and treatment. And Hirschfeld's Institute held some 40,000 files documenting sexual crimes as defined by Section 175. Which basically were an embarrassment to the other faction in Germany. So the first book burning in Germany was designed to destroy these files and destroy Magnus Hirschfeld's institute and library. Of course, Hirschfeld fled for his life, and basically they destroyed his institute. So that was what happened in 1933. The first book burning is depicted as a burning of Jewish intellectual material or non-approved Aryan literature or whatever. So, but it was intended to further the cover-up of what really the Nazi movement was all about. Now, in 1934, when Ernst Röhm was eliminated in the Blood Purge, known as the Night of the Long Knives, June 30th, July 1st, 1934, the reason for this was that Hitler was given the option of being put down by the heavy industrialists like Krupp and the Reichswehr, the Prussian officer class like von Fritsch and so forth, if he didn't deal with Röhm, because Röhm was calling for a second revolution, and basically the powers that be in Germany, the aristocratic class and so forth, wanted a return to order, and they didn't want to hear any more of Röhm's second revolution. They didn't. They were worried that the German military was restricted to 100,000 bodies, 100,000 men under the Treaty of Versailles, and so basically coming out of World War One. And so basically they wanted to consolidate their position at that point, and they were really worried about Rome's 4.5 million strong brown shirt organization, which Röhm wielded with considerable power. And so they didn't want to be subservient to Röhm, and of course Röhm was Hitler's close confidant and friend of 14 years. Röhm made Hitler primarily. And agitated from below with his brown shirt organization as the party worked from above politically.
Much documentation about the Vatican influence, and actually the Vatican putting him into power, and a Jesuit priest writing Mein Kampf.
They may have had something to do with it, because of course the SS was organized after the Jesuit organizing principles. Heinrich Himmler was known as the Black Jesuit. They referred to him as the Black Jesuit. So, and of course, the Nazi movement signed a concordat with Röhm, and furthered Roman interests, which were opposed to communism. You've got to remember that communists seized many of the Roman or Catholic assets and flow of income from Russia when Russia was overtaken by communism, and so they lost a tremendous amount of resources with the advent of communist Russia. So the church was not interested in seeing communism grow any further, and the Nazi movement seemed like a way of curtailing that growth, or opposing it at least, or maybe even possibly defeating it. So they entered into a concordat, but strangely enough, the Nazi movement also, the second concordat that they entered into was with Stalin, and they divided Poland and so forth, and they felt...
So they're working both sides of the fence, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was only a meantime type of thing, you know. It's like, we'll sign this concordat now, but of course, maybe there was no intention to adhere to the concordat. I mean, the Nazi movement was not really interested in keeping two agreements as much as they were favorable towards using any type of an agreement like the peace agreement at Munich, peace in our time with mm-hmm. Chamberlain and so forth, using it in a pragmatic fashion to further their political and military agenda. And in the meantime, a peace agreement would work quite well with those that wished to maintain peace. I mean, Britain didn't want to go back to war after being at war during World War One. They didn't want to go back to war. The people were not interested in going back to war so soon. And, of course, the United States at the time even was very predisposed towards peace and a non-war attitude. So,
right.
So anyway...
Let's hold it right there. I got to take another break. Come back for our last half hour with Kevin Abrams on the Investigative Journal. Back after this short message.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. because you can handle the truth.
Many Bible prophecies written thousands of years ago have been fulfilled in the past 100 years. Unknown by most people, even Bible-reading Christians, major end-time prophecies are being fulfilled today, including the one-world government, the one-world religion, the 10-nation confederacy of Daniel and Revelation, the mark of the beast, or 666. Speculation abounds about these ancient prophecies and what they might mean today. Now, one of the most foremost scholars on geopolitics, Dr. Michael Kaufman, who has stopped the ratification of international treaties in the U.S. Senate, has just released a DVD called World Events and Prophecy. His DVD explains how these and other major prophecies are being fulfilled today. Order your copy of World Events and Prophecy. It's only $20 plus shipping and handling at discerningtoday.org or call toll-free 877-271-7639. Don't be caught off guard. Order your copy of World Events and Prophecy at discerningtoday.org.
Come on, Bill. 2 weeks ago, you were riding a bicycle, and today you're showing up in your new car and telling me you're buying a house? What did you do, rob Bill Gates?
No, John, I didn't rob Bill Gates. What I did do is visit the website www.didyourobbillgates.com. That's where I learned how to make $3,000 to $9,000 each and every week, starting with my very first week. It's a simple program that does all the work for you. I'm already up to $25,000 just going on my third week.
Whoa. What was that website again?
It's www.didyourobbillgates.com. Now write this down, John. You should go there and learn how this program can help you become financially independent, too.
Thanks, Bill. I'm going there right now.
Check, please.
You got this one, right, Bill?
Sure, John. Don't forget, it's www.didyourobbillgates.com. Next time, you'll be buying me lunch.
Deal.
Attention, friends of freedom and liberty. Our constitutional republic is under a vicious attack by the sinister forces of world globalization. The hour is late, and we must all actively engage our families, friends, and neighbors before it's too late. Now you can exercise your constitutional right of free speech with a statement t-shirt from the Republic Broadcasting Network and NoTyranny.com. Wearing a statement t-shirt causes people to think, challenge, and debate what they've been spoon-fed by the controlled corporate media. There's no time to sit around in fear asking yourself, what can I do? Now is the time to make a strong public statement with one of the many t-shirts from Republic Broadcasting Network and NoTyranny.com. Go to RBNLive.com's Freedom Store, NoTyranny.com, or call 800-724-2719.
Okay, we're back with my guest Kevin Abrams, and he wrote the book The Pink Swastika. And Kevin, we were talking about how homoerotic behavior is at the core of the Nazi movement, and how basically you can't deny that the Nazi movement is live and well in America through people like the Bush administration and much documentation. The Bush family being connected to the Nazis, that's been documented in the congressional record and so forth. But let's define this, because still America believes in this, you know, homosexuality, the effeminate side, then you got the butch side, the man in the relationship, so to speak, the woman in the relationship. But it never goes any deeper than that. I think it has a lot to do with the pedophile problem in our country that we've documented on this show. You've seen many boys and mainly boys and some girls kidnapped in this country by a group that has been traced to go all the way to the top of our government and into the Vatican by a New York police detective that I've had on my show, who has a former detective who's documented this quite well. But anyway, let's get back to that so people really understand how this works. What I mean by that is the definitions of homosexuality and their political ramifications. Go ahead.
I've heard that program. I listened to it on your archives, and there's a lot. It's very plausible, and very very possible that this is actually happened and is happening. in America. The Brauch organization was eliminated because Hitler needed to consolidate his power, actually retain power, otherwise it was gone. So in 1934, the Blood Purge represented a consolidation of power and the elimination of the leadership. I just wanted to finish that train of inquiry off. And the 160 SS leaders were assassinated by Rome loyalists after the Blood Purge in payback for the elimination of their leadership. That's why the Brown Shirt Organization was criminalized and disbanded. The first identifying symbol for the for homosexual prisoners was the Brown Triangle, which is identified by Willie Fischer, a German historian, Willie Fischer, is that the proper identification for the Nazi homofascist or the pederast, the militant gay pederast under Ernst Röhm, was the Brown Triangle, because many of them were thrown into prison camps and then processed into regular German army units. They all had to go through reprocessing and to come under the German military, the organized German military. Anyways, we'll leave that. You must remember, one of the most important books to be written in recent history is the book titled Kinsey, The Red Queen and the Grand Scheme by Dr. Judith Riesman, who is almost a lifetime studier or observer of Alfred Kinsey and his sexologists in Bloomfield, Indiana. Kinsey engineered a scientific pretext whereby which American law could be overturned. The American laws that were predicated upon part and parcel of the American Constitution in reference to sex crimes and so forth. The American Constitution the American Constitutional Republic was predicated upon moral law, basically that murder was not lawful and that it was punishable by most severely. And basically, the sex crimes were defined, quite explicitly. The sodomy, they had the anti-sodomy laws, and so where the American Constitutional Republic was organized around the family principle, around the family, the benevolent male brotherhood for the protection and preservation of the family, what would be considered to be a human civilization with honest weights and measures and a moral and healthy sexual constitution, which are the two pillars of human civilization. So America was organized around the family and not around the principle of a homoerotic ruling class or brotherhood, which was characteristic of the Nazi movement. Now, Dr. Judith Riesman, in her book, Kinsey, Crimes and Consequences, which can be, some of the material can be accessed through my website, slaveshipamerica.com. Just go to author's articles and scroll down on the right side, and you'll come to some of Judith Riesman's material, her website, and so forth. There's an article there that she's written recently, last fall, on the pink swastika, or about the pink swastika, in which she refers to a homosexual chauffeur that used to drive Hitler around and was more than likely his homosexual lover. What's really unique about this particular situation is that his homosexual lover was more than likely Jewish, and so all Jews were persecuted under the Nazi regime. Goering is known to have said that I decide who is Jewish and who's not Jewish, and so forth. Goering was a transvestite, used to dress up in drag and so forth. Here you have one of the most powerful men in Germany that used to dress up in drag. So this type of thing was prolific amongst the Nazi rank or the Nazi leadership, and is exhibited in all of the Nazi leaders, primarily just most of the Nazi leaders that I can remember. Some of the ones that didn't exhibit these character traits escaped, left Germany or fled Germany at various stages. But primarily the Nazi movement was dominated by a militant gay pederast cult or homosexual cult, if you will.
If I just ask you a quick question, what do you think about the people in the New World Order in power in our country? You think they're under the same type of situation?
The indicators are there. In 1973, the APA was corrupted by and hijacked by the militant gay elements within the APA. they had on the basis of a vote by a minority of the membership, the APA membership, they had homosexuality removed from the Diagnostic Statistics Manual, which is used to define pathologies in America. They had it removed from the manual as being defined as a pathology. So they've been and basically you were mentioning earlier that there's an issue with the with using psychiatry as a way of bludgeoning people into some form of political conformity or attitude. This is very Orwellian. George Orwell's 1984 gives you some ideas to what really the attitude of the state is, the corporate state, is that you publicly have to embrace the mantra of the ruling elite. And of course the psychiatrists always see themselves as movers and shakers in terms of the mental attitudes of the people and so forth, and they like to define what a pathology is. And one of the more unusual definitions of pathology coming out of the APA was that if a person felt disturbed by his sexual relations with a person who was young, a younger person, that would constitute a pathology rather than the action itself. And this all comes out of Kinsey's research. It's very important for people to access some of this material, not only our book, The Pink Swastika, which is available to download, as I said, from the web and read at your leisure, but to look through the work done by Dr. Judith Reisman and her website. Go and read some of the material that she's compiled, because it's extensive and it's very well noted. And people should remember that the effeminate side of the homosexual world is a very disarming side. And as you've mentioned, they seem to be very flamboyant, and they're very gentle, and they give this disarming notion that homosexuals are harmless and to be tolerated and to be embraced as just other human beings, and basically they are. It's just that they adopt these false personas. It's interesting how the word persona is a Roman derivative, which means mask. So even the word person implies, from its Roman's root, a mask. So basically, the homosexual identity is a mask. It's a fictional entity, and basically it falls in line with the whole concept of a corporation, for instance, which is also a fictional entity. So America has entered into the realm of fiction, and like for instance, in terms of gay marriage. Gay marriage is an oxymoron. There is no complementary union between the same gender, which is a proper description of what marriage is between a husband and wife, mother and father, and so forth, which is focused on the preservation and furtherance of human society, if you will. So. The state has become more powerful in America. It was never intended to be this powerful. America was never intended to be a democratic republic or a popular democracy. It was established as a constitutional republic governed by rule of law, and those laws were derived from moral principle. And this has been the media began to regurgitate this mantra about how America is a democracy and so forth. And of course, media, opinion shaping, social engineering media becomes more powerful in a climate of public opinion and popular democracy, like where the majority rules and this type of thing, and the opinion of the majority can be cloned and it can be cloned more easily the more ignorant people are and the more oblivious they are to the realities of history and so forth, and the more immoral they become. So basically, the immorality or the abandonment of moral continence, if you will, enables the political elite to assume greater degrees of power and control over the people. It's interesting, there was a Catholic intellectual in America, his name is E. Michael Jones, and he's written a book titled Libido Dominandi, which means the domination through political or through sexual liberation of the libido, that once people's libido is out of the box, so to speak, that the government can assume greater control, greater degree of control of the masses. So it is a tool of the ruling class, which is why you'll see the Rockefeller Foundation and the Rockefeller family linked to both banking and sexology through their financing of the Kinsey Research, Kinsey Institute. And they use his numbers, like the 10% of the American public, the American male population were homosexual, and that 95%, Kinsey said 95% of the American public or American males were actually predisposed to criminally or sexually criminal activity. It's just that only 3 or 4% were caught, and they were the ones that were put in prison. So these types of figures were engineered by Kinsey and his sex workers to create a scientific pretext to overturn the American Constitution, primarily to overturn the American Constitutional Republic, and to impose a more administrative or corporate system, which is predicated entirely upon the absence of any moral consideration whatsoever. Is basically any kind of moral or ethical considerations are simply pretexts to create the appearance of enacting justice. I was just doing research on the web, and the word civilization, for instance, comes from the word, it's a Roman derivative from civil, which in Roman terms means to conduct justice or to implement justice in a civil manner, that justice must appear to be done. So we've entered into an era of appearances in America where the substance is not necessarily commensurate with appearance. So you it could be an actual opposite of appearance. There is no justice in a fictional system, and America right now is under commercial law, contract law. The Constitutional Republic is moral law. It sees man as a moral agent, whereas Kinsey, for instance, refers to human beings as the human animal. And that many of the sex crimes that we're seeing, that we define as sex crimes in America and Canada today, for instance, would be seen as legitimate expressions of the human animal in their quest for sexual outlets. Kinsey referred to these types of intergenerational relations, like a man buggering a young boy or whatever, as a legitimate sexual outlet, and that the pathology occurred on the part of the person who was doing the buggering, that if he had any reservations or qualms about it, that he needed to seek treatment and to settle down his conscience, so to speak. So that was a total inversion. The APA was used as a device to manipulate and to control the American educational system. The American system has been used to intimidate lawmakers. Kinsey's science was touted by in court as being legitimate science, and on that basis, laws were changed. They said, "Well, we can't cling to this old-fashioned notion of human morality when the science contradicts it." So basically, that's what happened: is that they said, "Well, science is more credible than moral principle," and science, as bogus and fraudulent and criminally derived as it was used and referred to by members of the judiciary to strike down previous laws that were to guard the norms of the American Constitutional Republic and institute more liberalized or forms of definitions for sex crimes and so forth. So it's quite a sordid history, but Judith Riesman has done a yeoman's job of documenting all this material. It's I don't know how she tolerates the. Sometimes when you're involved with this type of material, it gets to be fairly heavy, and it's not a pleasant area to be working in on a long-term basis. So I asked Judith how she, because Judith Riesman was formerly a songwriter for Captain Kangaroo, spending a lifetime reading about and documenting the sordid details of Kinsey's life is quite a move. The foundation. Like, for instance, let's go to a quote. Let's go to a quote by Plato from Banquet in Konrad Haydn's Der Führer, 1944. He was a German historian. Very excellent book. Der Führer is an excellent book on what was happening back in those years. He's on par with William Shire, who is a historian of record of the Second World War and the Nazi movement. Plato said, if it were possible to form a state or an army exclusively of homosexuals, these men would direct all their emulations toward honors, and going into battle with such a spirit would, even if their numbers were small, conquer the world. So anybody that's interested in furthering some type of material or imperialistic agenda is going to embrace the homoerotic ethos as a principle, as a means to gaining what would be considered today, in today's world, maybe even a corporate end. So corporations, it's no accident that we see large corporations supporting gay rights, for instance. So Knickerbocker, H.R. Knickerbocker.
Do you desire your health and vitality to be in harmony with the rhythms of nature? Trivortex technology features subtle energy products that boost energy levels, relieves pain and stress, and much more at very affordable prices. You have the opportunity to wear vitamins, minerals, and nutrients that absorb through your skin rather than taking them orally. This is real, not science fiction. Go to trivortex.com, that is TRIVORTEX.com, to open a whole new realm of health and vitality for you and your family. This is Brian David Anderson, inventor of Trivortex technology products that assist in so many areas, such as pain relief, symptoms of menopause, losing weight, or stopping smoking. Trivortex technology is in harmony with the rhythms of nature.
Hi, this is Steve Shank with Fearless Radio and RBN, your only source for solutions to problems of troubled times. Do you realize that 3 years ago, the JMS Food Group warned people that there would come a time when if you didn't grow it yourself, or you already had it stored, you wouldn't dare eat it? Wait a minute. E. coli on our spinach and lettuce? That's our food you're talking about. You know where E. coli comes from? Feces, black water. In short, poop. We have to decide quickly to get all the food we're going to need. It's obvious that contamination can leave us hungry even before food shortages shut us down. For help ordering your food supply and protection from dishonest suppliers, call 800-409-5633. On the web, efoodsdirect.com. On the phone, 800-409-5633.
Do you know the truth about cancer treatments? Do you realize that with all presently accepted methods, you are not correctly attacking the cancer and you are mostly fighting to survive the treatment? Do you realize that mutilating surgery, burning and poisoning of your entire system are totally unnecessary? But now it's cancer's turn to die with LaserMed Inc. patented methodology. Without cutting, bleeding, drugs, or damaging radiation, we can destroy skin cancer and breast tumors of any size without adverse side effects at our physician's office. Laser technology at its best. For more information, here's the number to call, 702-953-0267. Or visit www.lasemedinc.com on the web. That's www.lasemedinc.com. That number to call again, 702-953-0267.
Investigative Journal. My guest is Kevin Abrams, and he wrote a book called The Pink Swastika that we're going over this hour. Kevin, I always want to get into your writing about L'Amistad and Slave Ship America. We always run short on time because this is such a subject, but I promise you next time we will go over this, okay?
It's very important because most Americans today don't understand under which jurisdiction they live. legal jurisdiction.
Why don't we spend the last next? We have about 5 minutes. Go ahead and tell us a little bit, and that'll whet our interest. So we have you back again to really explain L'Amistad and Slave Ship America. Go ahead.
L'Amistad, Slave Ship America. Of course, my website is slaveshipamerica.com, and the article is on the website. The main thesis is there. Is an article about the L'Amistad slave incident in America in the middle of the 19th century, when John Quincy Adams was an elder statesman, American retired senator, and past president of the United States. There were a group of blacks that were seized off the Ivory Coast of Africa and by Spanish slave traders, and they were taken to Havana and then transferred and disguised as having originated from Cuba as born slaves rather than forced into slavery unlawfully, because the America, Great Britain, and Spain had entered into a treaty where born slaves were still legal, but free blacks were not. It was unlawful to force free people into slavery. So basically, the Spanish crown claimed the right of salvage. You know, salvage being the blacks who had rebelled. They rebelled against their captors and killed everyone on the ship on the L'Amistad, except for two of the officers, and they used them and hoped that they would guide them back to Africa, back to their homeland.
I wanted to mention we have about 2 minutes, so if you
okay. But you see, the black slaves lived under commercial jurisdiction that said that human beings could be items of inventory in commercial law, and that they were just basically, they didn't have their own rights and so forth. Well, America today, jurisdictionally, under the present administrative system, lives under the same system, under the same jurisdiction, considered the same legal entities as a black slave would have been during the days of black slavery in America. They live under commercial law, and basically they're treated as legal fictions or corporate entities, and this is the way that the government gets around taxation of the unlawful act of implementing an income tax against people or citizens in America, is that they define every citizen in America as a corporate entity, and that way they can tax the profits or the proceeds of corporate activity.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention this. You point out in this article, and it's very well said, that as Black's Law Dictionary explains, the full capitalization of the letters of one's natural name resulting in a diminishing of or complete loss of legal or citizenship status wherein one actually becomes a slave or an item of inventory. And you can go on my website. There's a CD that I have, Terry Lee's CD. You can buy it there. And it shows you how to get back your Christian name along with breaking these ties. But go ahead.
Yeah, so basically, in America, in legal sense, everybody is black. Everybody is a black slave in America today, metaphorically. Even if you're not black, you're the same. You're under the same jurisdiction. And you know, you have invisible chains, whereas the early black slaves in America had visible and very tangible chains. But these chains become more tangible in time. The invisible ones begin to solidify and to crystallize.
And that's what we're fighting against now. Listen, Kevin, we're all out of time. That hour went by fast. We're going to have you on again shortly, maybe in the next couple of weeks, to finish up on this. Thanks for being on the show.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Okay, that was Kevin Abrams. The Pink Swastika, go get it at slaveshipamerica.com. We're all out of time today on the Investigative Journal. I'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Until then, have a nice day and good afternoon.